A lot of us pick a place to live by default. We were born there, or we moved somewhere for a job. But maybe we're doing it backward. Maybe we should meticulously research the place we live, give it top priority, because it might just be the most important decision we make with our lives. Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to be with you today. This hour, we're talking with best-selling author Richard Florida. If you've heard his new term, which you probably have, creative class, Richard Florida identified it. This time around, he says, if you want happiness and great quality of life, start with the question, where? Richard Florida is the director of the Martin Prosperity Institute at the University of Toronto and the founder of the advisory firm The Creative Class Group. His latest book is called Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. There's an open door for you this hour. We hope you'll call and tell us how you picked a city to live in and whether or not it worked out for you. Also, you can tell us a little bit about yourself and get some advice about a city that suits your needs. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Richard Florida, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
So I really enjoyed reading your book. It was fascinating, and not just because Wisconsin shows up in it a couple of times, but it was really intriguing, this idea, which you're running counter to, that a lot of us have heard of, that the idea of globalization, that the world is getting smaller, it doesn't matter so much where we live, the idea that you can do any job anywhere, but you disagree with that idea. Why?
Well, you know, this globalization thing, which is obviously very important, sometimes it's a little bit overblown. Now obviously, companies are moving abroad. I mean, any sentient person living in an area like Milwaukee, Greater Chicago, the Midwest, Detroit, and Cleveland will tell you factory jobs are leaving that area. They're moving to Latin America, to Mexico, in the auto sector in particular. They're moving over to Asia and China and to Eastern Europe. But there's this kind of very strong argument, almost a myth, that, you know, with technological innovation, and it's not just about computers and the internet and the wireless and, you know, global transportation. This has been, you know, for 100 years or more. First it was going to be the telephone, you know, and then the telegraph, and then the telephone, and then the railroad train, and then the car, and now more recently airplanes and internet and wireless worlds, that was going to somehow make distance go away. That place was going to become completely irrelevant, that you could live virtually anywhere. And I guess this kind of argument really got, you know, came to a head with Tom Friedman's very, very interesting and in many ways very provocative book, The World is Flat, where Friedman argues, look, we're now in a flat world. There are 6 billion people in it. They're all competing for the same work, and that work is going to go to where the people are kind of the best qualified and the lowest cost. And, you know, I kind of like that argument. It kind of makes sense to me. But what we did is actually submit this to a kind of a rigorous test. And I don't mean to bore people out there, please, but what we did was we took those images of the world at night. Maybe listeners have seen these satellite maps of the black world, you know, at night with looking down with the lights popping. And we had some very, very kind of interesting geographic information computer science specialists, and we used those maps to kind of distill the economic and innovation centers of the world. And lo and behold, it's kind of amazing to me, no one else had ever done this. You know, not at the World Bank, not at the IMF, not at the great consulting firms, not at the great think tanks, not at the great universities. And so once we did that, it became quite clear to us that when we got the information, there are these 40 great regions of the world. I call them the mega regions, Boston, New York, Washington, Carter. Actually, Milwaukee is kind of in the center of one. They call it Chi Pits. It runs actually from west of Chicago through Detroit, through Cleveland, over to Pittsburgh. Greater Tokyo, Greater London, regions in Asia, Shanghai, Beijing. Anyway, these 40 mega regions, which house less than 18% of the world's population, produce two-thirds of all of our economic output and like 9 in 10 of all of our scientific innovation. So what I conclude in this book is the world may be flattening in some respects. Globalization may make it easier for certain places to do manufacturing, but it's not every place is created equal. And so there are these great spikes of economic activity. And as the world globalized, actually fewer and fewer of these clusters or mega regions or cities are becoming the real drivers of the world economy. And about 40 of them are the real key places that are driving this whole great big world of ours.
So how do you know if you've hit on a place that's spiky and does have a lot of economic drive and vitality?
Well, you know it when you feel it, you see it, you can kind of sense it. I mean, that comes back. But, you know, if folks are listening in, you can look at our maps at whosyourcity.com. I'm kind of laughing at myself, but you'll know it because the economic activity is great. Yesterday I live in Toronto now, I was sitting with a group of young students, asking them where they're going to live. You know, these kids came from all over the world and parts of rural northern Canada and, parts of the United States. To a person, they were all heading to a gigantic mega region. Some were heading to Toronto. Some were heading to New York. Many were heading to London. Others were heading to the Chicago area. Maybe a couple were going to L.A. Nobody was going off the grid, so to speak. And they didn't know I'm going to a mega region. They were just going to a place that seemed like it had great universities and lots of opportunity and lots of other young people. And they were kind of trying to set up their lives. But what's so interesting, I said, you know, every single one of you are heading to one of these mega regions. And I said to them, you know, especially with graduation coming up or just having come up in some schools, you're making the absolute right decision. You're going to one of these vibrant centers, and you may be paying, and they were bemoaning the fact, you know, well, maybe I should move home and not pay all the rent. But you're making the absolutely right decision because in terms of your opportunity structure, in terms of your career, in terms of job offers, the people you meet, and, you know, we talked about this idea about dating. You know, in terms of your potential pool of people you might date, and some of the kids were straight, and some of the kids seemed apparently to be gay. They seemed to be a mixture of ethnicities and sexual orientations and so on. But wherever you head, whatever your preferences are, you're going to have a bigger pool if you go to a bigger place, so you're making the right choice. And so I think you can look at the map, but more importantly, I think you know it when you feel it.
So you're talking about kind of planning your life and the questions you need to use to sort of make the decisions that are going to inform the rest of your life. And you make the case in your book that the question, where to live, should be sort of top on that list. Tell us why that is, because it seems a little counterintuitive.
Well, probably because I'm so thick-headed. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. And having read the book, written the book.
I hope you did both.
Talking about it a little bit and really reflecting. You know, it's interesting, folks listening in, when you write a book, you kind of go through this process of gathering data and writing. And what's neat about it is after you write it, you can reflect back on some of, I don't want to call it the hidden motivations or subconscious motivations, but what became quite apparent to me is I've moved 17 times since I graduated graduate school. And that was in 17 cities. It was a half dozen or so cities, moves within those cities. I've lived in New York. I've lived in Boston. I've lived in Buffalo. I've lived in Columbus, Ohio. Taught at Ohio State, a rival, Wisconsin. I taught at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. I've moved to Toronto. So I moved around quite a bit. And here I am. I'm supposed to be an urbanist, right? That's what people call me when they find a name for what I do. And I thought, have I ever really given this personally the thought it deserves? 17 moves? And even if though it's my so-called area of expertise, and I went back and I looked at the literature. You know, I'm a city planner by PhD. I'm an economic geographer by inclination. There was very little advice in my field. And then I came across this fantastic book. I'm sure listeners have looked into it. It was a bestseller. Dan Gilbert, the great psychologist at Harvard. He's talking about happiness in your life, how you find it. His book's called Stumbling on Happiness. I read this passage. There are three big decisions in your life that are going to determine how happy and fulfilled and, you know, wonderful your life will be. The first one is what you do for a living. Make sure that's exciting and fulfilling and you're charged by it. You love it. Second one is who you choose for a life partner. Make sure you choose someone that you're connected with and you can grow with and all the relationship advice and psychological advice. And the third one is where you choose to live. The rest of the book talks at length about numbers one and two and never even comes back to the third one. And I said, you know, I owe it to myself because my field, not just me, my field of city planning, urbanism, economic geography, has so many great things to say about place. And actually, it can give advice to real estate developers about where to make a development, or it can give advice to companies on how to select the location. It just seems so quite self-evident to me that somebody should make this kind of information available for just individuals or regular people. And I realized that even though I knew this stuff, I wasn't using it in my own life. So I went like, duh, I could write a book that would be helpful to me, but also not just helpful to me and my family. It could be helpful to, and then we said, you know, our relatives, But no, I could write a book that could be helpful to people. And 40 million of us make this decision every year. So it's a lot of people who need the advice. So that's why I kind of thought, well, I got to write it.
Well, you know that old saying that if you marry the right person, you'll be happy in a cardboard box. Most of us would sort of want to start there. Why should we start with where to live instead of, you know, who to marry?
You know, I found the right girl, and I found her, of all places, in Lansing, Michigan, on a speaking event so for the state of Michigan. So I think you're right about that. I think we would be happy in a cardboard box. But one of the things the book points out is that for many people, this resonated with me because, you know, I love teaching at Carnegie Mellon. I actually love living in Pittsburgh, but it didn't have a big market of eligible people. If you were a college kid, there were a lot of other college kids, and you know, if you were an older person, because Pittsburgh had seen tough times, many young people migrated out. But there weren't a lot of people my age to meet. And I thought about this, and we really dug into this, and we got some census data. We actually picked up on a wonderful map that the folks at National Geographic did. They called it the singles map. We redid this map using newer data, changing the definition. What we found, though, is if you're a young person looking for love, and it's the thing that's actually gotten the most coverage. I mean, Sex and the City, it's gotten the most coverage from this book. But we created this map which said, what are the places that have the best ratios, men to women and women to men? We found that the East Coast states, not just New York, but Washington, D.C., East Coast, tends to be a better place for men. There tends to be an overrepresentation. Greater New York has about 210,000 more single women than single men. On the other hand, the West Coast tends to have more single men than single women. Los Angeles has roughly 110,000 more single men than single women. Now, others, and it's on the website at HoosierCity.com. Others have said, "Well, Rich, you know, we can measure this differently." And they said, "You haven't controlled for quality. You know, the odds may be good, but the goods may be odd." I mean, all this funny stuff, and hundreds of people writing in. But the point is that that's absolutely right. But the point is there are certain places where the odds are better, and certainly there are many, many regions of the country where there are many, many more young single people. One of my students once did a wonderful paper on kind of talented and ambitious African Americans. She was a young African American woman, showing how Atlanta and also Washington, D.C., but particularly Atlanta, was such a wonderful place for young, dynamic, and single African-Americans because there were just lots of them there. Another student did a fantastic paper on why gay men have moved to San Francisco. But the point is there are certain places in your life where if you're looking for that certain someone, have lots and lots better odds. So I didn't say that's where you should move. Mm-hmm. What I said to people is, be aware of this, and be aware of the trade-offs you're making. If you're going to move to a place that has a poor singles ratio, you're going to have to be aware that your odds of finding that, you may still do it, the odds of finding that special someone may be reduced, whereas in another place you may have a slightly greater odds of finding that person.
Well, another interesting thing I found in your book, given that so many people move away for jobs because they think they can get ultimate career advancement somewhere else, wherever that else may be, I read a little factoid in your book that, according to a certain study, you'll know this better than I, but you'd have to make $133,000 more dollars additional income to compensate for the loss of leaving, if you're doing that, friends and family. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, trust me. I mean, that's probably the things I've gotten more fights with about this book is that single statement. It's a guy named Poudovi who did the study. He teaches in England, And he is an economist, a very capable economist. He tried to actually put a value and used a variety of equations and tests to actually put a value on how much you're giving up. And most people who argue with me say Poudovi has way underestimated this. But I use this 133,000 figure because two reasons. One, I talk about the trade-off between going mobile for your career as an academic. I went mobile. I grew up in New Jersey, large extended Italian-American family. I'm the only person who left. Everybody, brother, family, relatives, all my cousins, nieces and nephew, stayed behind and were rooted. I began to realize over time, though, although my career has been reasonably successful, there was a lot that I missed out over the past 25 years or 30 years of moving around for career. Then I met my wife, Rana. We met about 4 years ago. We got married 2 years ago. She comes from a large extended Jordanian family from the greater Detroit suburban area. And we began to talk about this. And I realized she's leaving a mom and dad and six siblings behind. and a wonderful extended family, lots of nieces and nephews, and I could tell it wasn't exactly the most thrilling thought to her to move away from this community. And I began to say, oh, my God, this is really a wrenching decision. This is not a, you know, because just I'm just a career-oriented person, maybe, but for many people, and what I said to myself is I have to make people aware of this. They shouldn't do this blindly. So I liked Poudabee's figure, and I kind of said in the book, I obviously owe my wife a whole bankload of money. You know, I owe her a great life because she left so much of what is fundamentally important to life behind. And I think in our world today, for folks listening in, I think this is so important because so many of us are going to be increasingly forced to be mobile, to pursue economic activity if it's clustering and becoming concentrated. More and more of us are going to have to leave behind our close family and friends and the things that make us a fulfilled life. And I just want people to be terribly aware. I tell a story in the book about a fellow who was a CEO of a public relations firm who actually, he became a good friend of mine, but he said, you know, Rich, I'm going to sit down with my family. We're going to make a joint decision. He sat down with his four kids, their spouses. They have a bunch of grandkids. He sat down and said, let's think about this. And ultimately, they decided to move as a familial unit to outside of Denver, Colorado. The whole family, mom, dad, the four kids, the families, all relocated. And I tell that story because I think not to say they did it right, but to make people aware of there's other ways to begin to deal with this trade-off in ways that can add a lot of positive. And if not, you should just be aware of the trades you're making as you go through your life.
I'm going to take a quick break now, and then we'll be back with more from Richard Florida, the director of the Martin Prosperity Institute at the University of Toronto and author of the new book, Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. We hope you'll join us this hour as well. Tell us how you picked a city to live in, what choices you made, and whether or not you think you made the right ones. Also, you can call and ask Richard Florida where you think you'd be best suited. He's got lots of data in the book about where to live for the different phases of your life. So do give us a call. We'd be happy to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Again, 1-800-642-1234. 1234. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30, you can tune in for Chapter a Day as Jim Fleming reads from Music Ophelia, Tales of Music and the Brain by neurologist Oliver Sacks. This hour, we're joined by guest Richard Florida, and he's the author of the new book, Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. We're looking at why place could be the most important decision you make, where to live, and that the rest of the decisions could follow from that one very important decision. The number to call to join in is 1-800-642-1234. And Richard Florida, let's go to the phones now and take a call from Daniel in Milwaukee. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on. I grew up in Wisconsin, and when I was 21, I basically dropped out of the University of Wisconsin because I ran out of money and worked for a little while and got some money together and made a kind of a decision that really changed my whole life. I decided instead of going back to school that I would go west, and I ended up picking Seattle, and I got out there in 93, and you know, boy, what a big decision that was. I ended up, I work at Microsoft now. And, you know, I when I was living in Wisconsin, technology, programming, you know, those were not really options for me professionally. And, you know, just by choosing, you know, where I lived, I kind of got vacuumed up into the industry, and it really changed my life. I will mention, though, I thought it was really interesting what you guys were talking about earlier about, you know, romantic choices. And, you know, going through my 20s in Seattle through the 90s, that was a really major issue, was the apparent lack or the high level of competition, you know, between the guys for the girls. And it's funny because one of my best friends is a girl who moved to Washington, D.C., and I hear the opposite from her about that. So I just thought that was very interesting.
Thanks a lot for your call, Daniel. And Richard Florida, there's someone whose life was directed by where he chose to live. Do you hear stories like that a lot, people who pick a place?
I think Daniel it could be the case study or the poster child for Who's Your City. So I just want to say thanks so much, Daniel, for calling in. And two really big things that are quite apparent. One is, well, actually more than two. One is, I say that life has three big moves, And the most important move, I say, is this move after college or after education. That's when people are most likely to move, in the early to mid-20s. Second big move comes when you have not get married, when you have kids. Third big move happens when the kids leave the house. But back to this. With college graduation, so many kids are telling me, I'm going to move home with mom and dad. I don't have a lot of money. Wake up, people. The choice of where you live after college, and Daniel made this case, it's even more important than the college.
Mm-hmm.
And that choice is so absolutely critical. It will shape your life. It's, I think, a bigger impact on your life than where you choose to go to school. So in Daniel's case, he ended up with Microsoft. He ended up in his field. But the other part of this that's beautiful is that Seattle does have a terrible ratio for men to women. Women do have much better odds ratio in Seattle. And, of course, as you said, Washington, D.C. has just the opposite. And I've heard from many people like Daniel who tell me that the competition out there for a single guy, and even though single guys can be quite successful, is just dreadful.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Daniel. And we'll go on and take a call from Jim in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Jim, you're on the air. Oh, I guess we've lost Jim. Let's try for Bruce in Milwaukee. Hi, Bruce, you're up.
Hi there. I'm approaching 60, and I can relate to this discussion. I came from a family with six children, and we are spread across the country. And every place everyone's moved has had major impacts on who they met, how they lived, how successful they were, what kind of connections they had. I actually lived in Toronto for a while, and I regret not staying there. I moved to the Chicago area and ended up in the tail end of Milwaukee. And I feel like I missed something by not staying in Toronto.
Hmm.
And but I, you know, this concept of globalization, of concentration of economic power, and then of course the subsequent contacts that you make through it, makes a lot of sense. It's a very smart way to make a decision. And I've been trying to get out of Milwaukee for about 5 years, and I'm looking at Minneapolis. Is that a good place for me to go as I approach 60?
Richard Florida?
Well, first of all, thank you for the nice words about Toronto. And what's so interesting and yet ironic about this is, yeah, there are a lot of, it's often behavioral economists say the grass always looks greener, you know, but lots of people in Toronto, for some reason, kind of compare it to Chicago, and many people in Toronto compare it negatively. They say, well, what Mayor Daley have achieved with the park and our waterfront thing, so it's nice to hear your good words about Toronto, and I think Toronto has a lot of tremendous strengths, but it also has its issues. I think Minneapolis is absolutely a fantastic place. In fact, and actually, for people in that age range, and also for other groups, but Minneapolis area comes up very, very, very highly. But the main point I want to make is this age range, 60, is really the third big move. You know, that first one is Daniel, when Daniel made it in his early to mid-20s. Second one is when you have those kids, and then what I'm saying to people is don't just move to the suburb down the street. Have a good look at the kinds of places that might fit you. And then thirdly, the one is when you're getting in that 50s, 60s, they call it empty nester or retiree. That choice can really make your life hum. So what I would encourage is go to the website, whosyourcity.com, and I'm being really honest. Take this little tool we call the Place Finder and write me an email, you know, florida@creativeclass.com, and let me know what are the places that come up as the places that are going to be great for you. Put Milwaukee in there, put Chicago, put Toronto, put Minneapolis, maybe put a few other places. It's a really easy-to-use tool, and it will give you, now I say in the back of the book, I say there's some other steps, and they're on the website too you should take, but do this seriously. Don't just jump at Minneapolis. It may be the place for you, but give it the kind of attention it deserves.
Richard Florida, I'm hearing a sound, well, I was hearing a sound a little bit like a Parisian ambulance. Are you hearing that as well? Just
yeah.
Trying to figure out if that's on your end or not, if that's anything we could get
sure.
rid of.
How should we do it?
I have no idea. Is there a phone off the hook or a pager or anything? I hear it.
Hang on a second. I will switch phones and let's see what happens.
All right. Thank you so much. Now it's louder.
Hello?
It's still there. Oh, now it's gone. So maybe
it's fading in and out.
Yeah, you're right. Well, maybe we'll try a different phone line when we take a break, but we'll bear with it for now. It's pretty faint. Let's go on with Janine in Madison. Hi, Janine, you're on the air.
Hi. I don't think my story is very unique. I moved originally to Madison from the suburbs of St. Paul to go to school. It was, at the time, ranked third in physical sciences for the University of Wisconsin. But changing my major in college, which most people tend to do, I went into nursing. I got a job at the UW Hospital, and I love my job, but you trip and get married, and you feel kind of stuck where his family's here, my family's Minnesota, which is not is good to start a family. Like I said, I have a great career. I got good pay, great benefits, but we can't stand the winters here. We have a tendency, most of the places we've been to, especially on our winter vacations, have been Mexico or someplace that where we wouldn't necessarily want to move to. We haven't been around a lot of places in the U.S., but that seems to be something that's constantly on our mind, especially every year that rolls around. Same with basically my whole extended family's in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, the whole extended family for my in-laws are here. We get pulled by so many factors because I make such great pay and have such great benefits. That would have an impact. Being away from family would have an impact. But, you know, my husband even's gotten to the point where he's like, we're going to retire on a boat. Well, we don't have experience with that, especially in the ocean. Like, but and then I was going to make one other comment about my sister. Now, she was a manager here in Madison and moved to Key West. And now she's a snorkel boat first mate on a snorkel boat. And, you know, for the first time, she seems happy. And I think people end up staying places longer than they want or anticipate just because they don't know where to go.
Thanks a lot for that call, Janine. And it sounds like she's really being pulled in some different directions. How do you decide of those directions which is most important?
Parisian ambulance comes and goes. I love it. But I think Janine is, you know, I hate to say Janine is like me, but Janine and I share a lot in common. I live in Toronto now. The winters are really cold. I don't like cold weather. And let me say kind of what we're going to try to do and what I find a lot of people are doing. And Janina's sister in Key West. The housing crisis in the United States is a terrible thing, and people are losing their homes. But one of the things that we're finding is many, many more people, especially, and I don't know exactly how old Janine is, but at some point they're going to be free of work obligations. That may be 20 years down the road, but it may be closer than that. My inclination is to think about living in more than one place. I think being close to family and friends is critical. I think if you live in and around a place like Madison, which ranks off the charts on many of my indicators, it's a fabulous place. Obviously, spring, fall, and summer are spectacular. Summer is not ideal, even in Key West, with hurricanes and so forth. I would encourage her to think about, you know, getting a small place. Maybe it's a boat. Maybe it's a small house. And don't think about having to live just in one place. You know, maybe when you're working full tilt, you don't go every month. But increasingly, people have flexible schedules and can manage their careers. But the point I'm making is now is the time to buy. And if you miss this opportunity, you know, it's going to be 10 or 15 years till the market is going to come down again like this in those southern Florida locations. So if warmth really matters to you, but you want to stay close to family and friends in the north, actually, and Janine, you'll find this interesting, and you may want to explore it. I was just at a major symposium with IBM-sponsored in London. They had their CEO there and their top vice president for human resources and talent. They talked about not only talent pools, how do they get talent, talent flows. They had identified a group of people. Now, these were retired people, older people, and these were in the pharmacy area. They were retired pharmacists and so on and so forth. They needed pharmacists. They said, okay, you can work 6 months of the year in Michigan or Wisconsin or upstate New York, and you could work 6 months of the year in Florida. And literally, these people were multi-location, two-location people who had a job that allowed them to be flexible. And particularly with the need for nurses and healthcare professionals, it's not outside the pale to be able to construct that for yourself.
Thanks a lot for that call, Janine. We're going to take a break now and try to fix the Parisian ambulance sound you're hearing there. We'll see what's going on. And we'll be back to take your phone calls with Richard Florida, who is director of the Martin Prosperity Institute at the University of Toronto and the founder of the advisory firm, the Creative Class Group. His latest book is called Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. We hope you'll call and join in this hour and tell us what you're thinking of about where to live. Are you happy with where you live, the criteria that you based your decisions on, or are you looking for a new place and you'd like some advice on that? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After two on Science Friday, the common ground in the work for reproductive rights and environmentalism, plus monkeys control a prosthetic arm by thought. That's this Talk of the Nation Science Friday, I should say, is coming up at 2 o'clock today on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, back with you here on the Ideas Network. We're talking this hour with Richard Florida, the author of the book Who's Your City? How the Creative Economy is Making Where to Live the Most Important Decision of Your Life. He'll be giving you advice on where to live and helping you sort out the decisions you've already made. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Richard Florida, are you with us? Sounds like we're still working on getting that line shored up, so let's go ahead and take a phone call in the meantime. We've got Frances on the line from Westfield. Hello, Frances, you're on the air.
Hi. My husband and I, we have moved from Chicago. We met. We're both nurses. We've been living like an hour outside of Madison. And my choice of going with him, because I was young and in love, and I do like Wisconsin, but it does affect being away from your family from the Chicagoland area. And now I have a daughter who's graduating from Milwaukee, and she's taken off this June to London for her career. But I really feel, you know, with what's going on with the gas prices, try to stay in contact with your family. It is being a burden because just the budget, that $50 extra is $70, you know, you want to shoot down to see your family for a weekend. That is really affecting your connection with your family.
Do you see people making a choice because of gas prices and economics to stay closer to their families?
Yeah, well, we're trying to sell. We need to get, because I just decided, you know, what we spend in gas for jobs, we're both realizing this is ridiculous. I mean, we've enjoyed our lives living out in the country, living away from the big city life. But now with what the gas is doing to the world, you know, we have to get back into a town. We need to have some type of transportation because, you know, I just don't feel it's right to be spending the money that people are spending. So I think you're going to find a lot of people from the country coming back into the city life.
Let's see if we can get Richard Florida in on this.
Here, and all is good. So thank you, guys.
Great. Thanks for bearing with us.
No, I think she's right. I think that this ideal of a sylvan, ex-urban, rural life that's this kind of Jeffersonian image of America, maybe for some people who can telecommute, you know, 4 days a week and commute in 1 day a week, it's possible. But, you know, I'm not an expert in oil prices, but there are lots of people who say we're reaching peak oil. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's what they're saying. And you know, estimates I hear from reasonable people, not crazy people, but, you know, our people are saying $7 to $12 a gallon in the near term. I mean, this is going to spur a major rethink of where we choose to live. And my hunch is, and also the city properties, whether that's Milwaukee or certainly Chicago, New York and London off the chart, the in-town locations are becoming preferred and expensive. And especially if you're thinking about this now, you got to move. And one of the things that's nice about Wisconsin is the fact that I know Milwaukee really well. I actually quite love Milwaukee. I actually think Racine is an amazing place with the lakefront. And so Wisconsin still has affordable places, which are very, very close to, you know, one of the world's major international hubs of economic and transport, airport activity, Chicago. So almost, you know, in a way, and this is, I think, really important for folks to understand, the suburbs in the past used to be this band of towns, like around your city. where I grew up, the New Jersey suburbs, the Connecticut suburbs of New York. Now, when I let me take New York, for example. When I think of the new New York suburbs, the new New York suburbs are Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. That's where people are going. In fact, many of the people who are editors and writers for major New York publications are now relocating to greater Washington because they can get a close in-house, they can plug into their bureau, but they can afford it where Manhattan is unaffordable. So I think, you know, in Wisconsin, you have lots of fantastic options. You have lots of great cities. They're on the rebound. They're remaking themselves. And especially if you're beyond, you know, kids are an issue, schools are an issue. But if you don't have kids or the kids are out of the house and in university, boy, oh, boy, there are so many wonderful options for you. And I think the time to act is now because sooner or later, those in-city prices are going to they're up already, but they're going to start going up dramatically over the next 5 or 10 years for all the reasons she just mentioned.
Is Milwaukee on any of your lists?
Milwaukee is on the list. It tends to be, actually, when I ranked every metropolitan area every metropolitan area over 250,000. We ranked as a best place for various stages of your life. Milwaukee, competitively speaking, the Milwaukee metro, not the city, the whole metro, does the best for empty nesters. And I think, I don't have the rankings in front of me, folks, by the way, you can just go to HoosierCity.com. They're all there. But I think it's in the 35 range. The place that scores off the chart across the board in all of the rankings across all life stations for young singles and mid-career professionals and families with children is Madison. And I was quite surprised. The rankings there are like a 4, a 3, a 12, so quite consistently high. And it's one of very few places across the country that scores quite consistently high among those life stages. But Milwaukee, certainly for that demographic looking beyond children, scores very well. And that's something interesting about the book. The sun and the fun destinations score well for some people, but on balance, it's a mix. It's some sun and the fun and the sun destinations, but it's also relatively cold places, and Milwaukee and Pittsburgh in particular score reasonably well for destinations of empty nesters because of arts and culture and affordability, and one other thing, great health care, which seniors and older people, or I'm a new elderly, a baby boomer, what people in that age range really seem to need.
Well, thanks so much for that call, and we take one now from Kelly in La Crosse. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thanks for having me, and what a fun topic.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Yes, I was just calling to share with you, I made the first big move, as you've outlined, with my husband after we graduated from college in kind of rural Minnesota, moved out to rural Northern California. And then while we were out there, we bounced around for a while, for a couple years, and then we moved to rural Wisconsin. And then just made our second big choice. I'm in grad school, and I had to decide between going back to the Pacific Northwest up in Portland or staying here in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And it was kind of one of the more rigorous decision-making processes we've made in a while, since now we've got a little one in our family to think about and being close to family, as you've been mentioning. But we've still moved around quite a bit here in Wisconsin and are trying to integrate things that we experienced on the West Coast, culture that we really loved about our lifestyle out there, while we're in the Midwest culture now. And we're about to approach our second big move of where to settle our family, which we just don't know quite when that's going to happen yet. But I guess my question is when does it get too much to move around? We've been so transient. I mean, it's nice to have minimal possessions that we can move around and float around and be in new communities, but when does it just kind of become too much stress for us? And I also was wondering when you recommend to kind of settle down with the kids, like how long is it kind of okay on them to be moving around and meeting new people before it gets a little bit, probably doesn't quite get harmful, but when it gets a little bit too hard to adjust.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'll say what I said before, and I really would encourage you to take the place finder about this next big move.
Mm-hmm.
Plug in it and to do it with some rigor and to read the 10 steps that I lay out, one, the place finder, but then I give you 10 steps about how to actually test drive. I mean, what's so interesting to me is you'll go to buy a car and you'll go test drive all these cars and see how they ride, and no one does this with a plate. So it actually walks through a protocol for having help you make a better decision. But just to your main point, the rule of thumb is when you're outnumbered by the children, you're in trouble. So the third one comes along, as all of my friends who have three kids tell me, that's when you're in big trouble. I don't think you should worry about this. I think what you should realize is that there may be times in your life when you want to be mobile, and I don't think it's terribly disruptive for kids as long as mom and dad understand where they're going. Move. But I think you're at the third, the second big move stage. And we say that's when the kids are there and you're really thinking about schools and where they want to grow up and what you want to give them. One thing that I think you should think about, most people forget this, but I think you should think about it. Where do you think your kids will want to live when they grow up? Now, I have a friend who moved to Toronto for this reason. He was living in Pittsburgh. Told me this after we had both moved here. He said, you know, Rich, I really thought about it. And I said, there's not going to be much opportunity in Pittsburgh for me. I love it there, but for my kids, I want to go to a place where there's some chance they might stay. Mm. Not because I want to hold them back, but there's some chance that they'll be able to stay near us. So I think that's something that should at least cross your mind. And then the second thing you really want to do is think about this, the set of things you already think about. Great schools, great education, close to family, social reinforcement, where's going to be the best life for them, and really make that move in a sensible way. I do think, though, think of, as you're doing, don't just look at the places, you know, 6 miles in each direction. If the Pacific Northwest is a place you like, put that on your list. If there's other places you think you might like to be, put that on your list. They may not come out the top, and you may end up 6 miles away, but at least what I'm saying is be smart about it. Give all the options a thorough, a rigorous, because it's a big decision. You don't want to be making it every year. Give it a rigorous go, and then see which is the one that makes you, and then go take it for a test drive.
Hope that helps you, Kelly, and thanks for the call. And we'll take a call now from Kathy in Sun Prairie. Hi, Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is a great topic.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, the state of the economy has prompted much discussion between my husband and I as well about where to live. And in particular, looking at the tax implications of living in different states, particularly income tax, but also sales tax and property tax. And I thought I heard a statistic the other day about Wisconsin taxes relative to income being ranked one of the highest in the nation. I think 11th it slipped to. But looking at areas like Seattle, Washington, where you can live in one community and take advantage of the no state property tax, and then work in another community where there's no state income tax, or states like Florida that obviously have lower taxes. You look at, I think, Alaska is one of the most attractive in terms of the state taxes, but obviously, Alaska comes with some downsides as well. Do you have any information regarding some of the better places to live in terms of total taxes paid for each state?
Well, the book gets into that, and it certainly would tell you where to go to get that information. Mm-hmm. My own hunch is this calculation is even more complicated than one thinks. I mean, first of all, usually what happens, I'm not saying in every case, usually what happens, let's take Florida, for example, a state I know very well. Oh, yeah, it has no state income tax. So, in a sense, you're thinking, oh, my God, I'm living in Pennsylvania, I'm paying X percent. I'm living in Michigan. I'm living in Toronto, I'm paying a 14%, you know, tax, and it sounds onerous. In Ontario, the province we live in, the property taxes in Florida are off the chart. They're probably 3 to 4 times what we paid in Washington, D.C., or what we pay in Toronto. So, you just have to really think about the whole, and then the sales tax and the whole package of taxes you're paying. The other part of this is that generally speaking, not exclusively, you get what you pay for. In other words, one of the reasons we chose to come to Toronto, even though it has high taxes, state taxes, low property taxes, is because in Toronto, we get a lot of great services. And I don't mean just garbage pickup. You know, we have fantastic public schools in the city that our friends send their children to, and moreover, health care is a free good. So the point is to really think through the package not only of cost, taxes you're paying, but also at the same time, what are the services that you need at the various stages of your life, and how much of those do you want the jurisdiction to provide, and how much of those are you willing to pick up on your own? And then pick the place that balances those best for you. But it's a very, very complicated calculation.
Well, I hope that helps you, Kathy. And we thank you for calling. And Richard Florida, talking about Toronto, one of the things that I was a little bit jealous of reading your book was sort of the personal safety there that parents felt for their children. They would let them bike along major routes and let them, you know, go 4 blocks down to do a play date, that kind of thing. Are there cities in the U.S. that match that kind of safety that seems to be felt in Toronto?
You know, I think so, although I have so many friends that are parents in the state, and they are so darn worried. They're just so darn worried, and they're kind of the helicopter parents. They won't let the kids out of their sight. So, you know, we kind of called it the trick-or-treater index in the book. Would you let your kids trick-or-treat without supervision like they do in the city of Toronto? And this other woman, I found out, after having wrote about this, you know, had a popsicle index. She said, would you let your kids run out to the popsicle man, you know, the fellow who comes to the ice cream truck, and get an ice cream without parental supervision? I think this is really important because in my own view, you know, creativity is part of a theory I believe in, and that children really need freedom. That once you have to control, you know, I had freedom growing up in New Jersey. I could ride my bike wherever I wanted to in the 60s and 70s. Once you take away that freedom and restrict children too much, I think you're doing them a disservice. So in my own calculation, when kids come along, I actually think that's very critical. And maybe that's the method, the rule of thumb to put in your head. Would you let your kid trick or treat without supervision? Would you let them go get a popsicle without supervision? And if you say no to those two things, I don't want to say count it out. There may be other great attributes of your community, but at least keep it in top of mind in making that decision.
So what U.S. cities did score well then on the trick-or-treat index?
Well, we didn't build the trick-or-treat index. I used it as a way to talk about Toronto versus Washington, D.C. This woman, who I cite in the book, she actually built a popsicle index for the whole country, and I have her citation in the book. Actually, the cities, the places that score well for families with children, you know, and we do this in all the different ranges, large cities, and I was taken to task by the Washington Post for making the trick-or-treater, and I reported back to them that actually, for best families for children, Washington, D.C. Metro was number one. So even though I had taken it to task on the trick-or-treater index, it scores very highly. Boston, Silicon Valley, New York, and San Diego. Smaller places, Worcester, Massachusetts, Ventura, California, Bridgeport, Stamford, Connecticut. And then of smaller places still, Manchester, New Hampshire, Boulder, Colorado, Provo, Utah. So there's a range of places that score well. Looking at a complex of factors, you know, amenities, culture, job opportunities, great schools for kids, you take those all together. But I think what we're focusing on is what are those places that kids feel safe in, and therein, I mean, have a look at that popsicle index and do your own calculation. But I do believe one of the big challenges facing the U.S., I do believe this, and I think the U.S. doesn't get better at this. Not only my friends in Toronto, my friends in Stockholm, we have a Swedish researcher visiting my institute. She said she can leave her kids in the stroller outside the store while she goes shopping. And feel completely safe. So it's a very different lifestyle, and I think Americans maybe want to get some of that back.
Oh, I'm sure we do, yeah. Well, let's go back to Shannon in Elkhorn. Hi, Shannon. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm originally from Philadelphia. I moved to Wisconsin when I was in high school with my family. My family moved back to Philadelphia right after I graduated from high school. I moved to Chicago for 3 years to go to college, and my boyfriend and I have been together for about 5 years. We moved here to Elkhorn, Wisconsin to get into real estate, and I have been out here for about a year, and we'll be graduating in another year. And I just feel out here, I really like it. I think it's really gorgeous out here in Wisconsin. I just don't feel like I belong out here. And I'm just not sure what to do. I mean, I miss my family in Philadelphia, but Philadelphia's not really somewhere that I want to live. It's too much of a city for me. I want to be closer to my family, but I don't think my boyfriend and I would live there.
All right, thanks for the call, Shannon. Richard, Florida.
Shannon brings up really the main point of the book. And the main point of the book is not only how much money you can make in a city. Not that these are important. What the taxes are in a city. The main point isn't just, you know, how much wealth you'll accumulate or the income you'll have in a job. What the main point, and I have several chapters devoted to this. We did a big survey with Gallup. How will you feel that you belong? We actually call this, what is the city's soul and how does it speak to you? And we find there are a number of factors that really matter. being in a place that has both physical and natural beauty, that invests in its environment, that has wonderful green space and trails, that believes in its architecture, that protects its history, and then being in a place where it's open-minded and easy to meet people and make friends and connect to the community, and other factors as well. But what she's saying is so important, and one of the things that I'm actually kind of distressed about when I did the book is so many quite successful people were living in wonderful places, including a woman who lived in Toronto and said, I felt like I didn't belong. I felt like I wanted to go home. She ultimately moved back to rural Virginia because that's where she was from. But the sense of finding belonging, finding meaning, finding home, going back home is incredibly powerful. And I think the way you have to do that is you have to go get to know these places, visit them, spend time in them, not just pick one, literally go and spend a week or 2 weeks. I know it sounds like a big thing, but in the scope of your life, it's not. Take your vacations in cities you might want to live in.
We've got to leave it there. I'm sorry, Richard Florida. We could obviously go on for a long time, but it's been a great conversation, and we thank you for your time.
You guys. And thanks so much to the callers. It's been great talking with all of you.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Richard Florida is the director of the Martin Prosperity Institute at the University of Toronto and the author of Who's Your City? I'm Veronica Rickert, in today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.